You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is storyboard artist and director, Brianne Druhard. This is part two of my conversation with Brianne Druhard. So if you haven't listened to part one yet, take a pause, go back and listen. Still here? Great. Let's dive into part two. You know, all of the experiences that you've had and your comic, of course, and learning to do more storytelling in that way, I feel like that probably helped when you were developing pitching shows too. Can you talk about your development work?
Yeah, I can. So when the first time I pitched was actually because of the recession in 2008, 2009. I keep forgetting like which year it was really bad. It might have been 2000. No, you know what? I think
you don't have to be precise.
Totally no, I okay. don't. But I think 2009 was when I worked on Brave and the Bold. So 2008, I had worked. I think so. Early 2004 is when I started. So I think at that point I had like 4 to 5 years of experience under my belt, but it was only character design. And when I had first started on Teen Titans, like I'd come from CalArts, and a lot of the people I hung out with in school, we always talked about making our own films outside of whatever we would be doing. And I think even back then when I was graduating CalArts, like I was trying to look into like book illustration, but it was definitely every agency I contacted was like, oh, you don't contact us, we contact you. So I could not figure out how to like, because I really did kind of take to heart a little bit that my teachers were like, there's nothing out there. So I did a lot of like off and odd jobs and stuff. And I actually, before I started working on Titans, between working at the game company, I worked for somebody who had their own show on TV, but they weren't really an artist themselves. They were more of like a business person who kind of was able to get their idea picked up, but they didn't really work like as an artist or creatively. I think the closest, I mean, it wasn't this extreme, but I think the closest to describe that relationship was kind of like Devil Wears Prada. Because I was doing art for this person, but I was also like helping them with errands.
Okay.
So yeah, it was interesting. I don't want to say too much because I think that person might still be around. I don't know. But wow, I just lost my train of thought.
No, we do what we got to do. There's nothing wrong with that. Details happen all the time.
Yeah. So I think Okay. So I was helping that person. They were also pitching another animated show. So I was doing art for that person for that, and they were all over the place with what they were doing with this project. And like, I was still like very new, very green, hadn't worked in TV yet. I just remember thinking like, this is interesting. You know, I was getting paid very little for what I was doing, like insanely little. Basically, I was just paying for the gas drive out to meet with this person. That's how much they were paying me. And at one point, this person had me meet with somebody at the studio that their show was at. A recruiter, and recruiter thumbed through everything and was like, oh, you're not a fit for anything here. We can't use you. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, like that's, I don't see anything in your artwork that would be a fit. And they weren't necessarily like mean about it. They just were like being honest. So I was like, well, okay. You know, and of course it ended up being Warner Brothers TV. And then a year later I'm working on Titans, and they were like struggling to find somebody who understood what anime was, because most of the people they were getting were all the feature people that were unemployed. Like Disney feature, who draw amazingly, but not in that specific aesthetic, you know, which back then, like, you know, nowadays it's not as weird to like, you know, have somebody draw in that style. But so I kind of looked out in that way too. Like if I was applying for that job now, I don't think there's any way I would get it. But anyway, that was like my first foray into development, was like doing designs for this person. And then when the recession happened, before the recession happened, when I started on Titans, I remember Glenn asking me like, you know, is this all you want to do? Are you going to do anything with like your own stuff? And I was like, well, I've been kind of fiddling around with this you know, other these other things. And like the first few paychecks I had, because I also like lucked out and was able to get a grant in, between the video game job and working on Titans. Like I applied and illustrated this like teenage handbook for Canada. And I used that money for rent, but I also used it to buy like, basically, I mean, Dell was still a good computer at that time, but I got like a Dell gaming computer because like the graphics card was really high end. So I was like, oh, I'll animate, you know, I'll learn how to do Flash and stuff. So yeah, so talking to Glenn, he was like, well, do you have any other stories or anything? But, he's like, but he was also like, you don't want to do this though. Do you want ulcers? Do you want to be a showrunner? And I'm like, I don't know. It wasn't really a goal. I'm like, I just want to like make stuff. So I actually started drawing Harpy around then. And, you know, just as fun. Like I was like, oh, maybe I can make like a short about this like elf living in a mushroom or something. And then the show I worked on after Titans was Class 3000. And sometimes I would finish my assignments really early on that show and they wouldn't really have extra for me to do towards the end of the day. So I would just kind of start working, fleshing out Harpy then, just because it was something to do. I wasn't necessarily thinking about pitching it. I think I was just like, I don't know what to do with it. I just like, I mean, I've always, even before growing up, I would always come up with my own characters and stories. I think most of us did that. And same sort of thing. It was just something fun to do. And then the recession happened. I was having trouble getting work. The only real work I was getting was freelance design on Transformers animated, but they didn't have the budget to hire like another designer. So it was still work. And then that crew was really good about like asking me to come meet them for lunch so that there'd be social time and stuff. So it was, I mean, it was still nice. I'm not going to knock it, but I heard that they had a shorts program starting up within Cartoon Network called Cartoonstitute, which they kind of brought back recently. And apparently like my name was one that was on the list of like people that they were kind of interested in talking to. So I went in and pitched Harpy then. And that was like my first real pitching, and it was awful, but they gave me really good constructive notes. And then they were willing to take it to basically to option it so I could do a storyboard. And I boarded and the money was pretty low. So basically I could either hire a board artist to board it, or I could take the money myself and board it. And it was money I needed. So I did my first real storyboard, and it was awful, but it was enough, you know, to get the job done, I guess. And I did it like in Adobe Photoshop. It was like my first time drawing in the computer. Like I'd always drawn on paper before that. So the drawings were like really just very crude, and it didn't go forward, but I did get that paycheck, you know, and they passed on it. And then from that, a couple other studios were like interested in it briefly, like WB Interactive. I had one meeting with them, but they were like, oh, we're that when at that time I think WB Interactive was like on its last legs, so nothing went there. Nickelodeon looked at it briefly back then, even like none of those people are still there obviously, but I remember getting the note that was like, oh, we're only taking pitches about animals or something. And I was like, oh, okay, at least you know that's what you guys want. And then I was talking to Disney TV for about a year, and then that was like super weird. I probably don't want to get into that too much, but it was interesting. It was enough where I was just like, oh shit, like I should have gotten legal help or something. But luckily, you know, Harpy came out of that unscathed. So that's good.
That's great. I'm sorry you didn't do that.
Yeah. And then not long after that was when Warner's was taking internal pitches for DC Nation. And Amethyst was one of the characters they had on the list. And she's like an old 80s DC character they haven't done much with. But she's like, I don't like comparing her to She-Ra because I feel like, yeah, they're both fantasy stuff. But as personalities and the type of characters they are, I feel like they're very different. Mm-hmm. But it was closest into like the stuff I liked, which is one of the reasons I was working on Harpy, was I was like, there's no fantasy. Like, I'm so into like RPGs and video games. Like, this is the type of show I like would have wanted to watch when I was a teenager. And that's the whole reason why I was developing Harpy. But anyway, yeah, Amethyst was on the list, and it was very similar. Like they had a lot of similar elements I like, so I ended up pitching that one, and then that's how that ended up going, becoming a series of shorts. And Like, I still wish that we could have gotten a TV show. Like, there's still part of me that would still love to do it now, but it's okay. Not everything needs to, you know, turn into a big thing. But yeah, so anyway, that Amethyst happened, and then, you know, weird studio stuff happened. I was depressed, and then Katie was like, make a Harpy webcomic. And then from the webcomic, then one of the execs that was working at Nickelodeon while I was on Pig Goat messaged me and was like, hey, so there actually might be, like, the door might be open for, like girl-led, an action-adventure fantasy girl-led cartoon. Like, they're looking for something to hit that. So anyway, I was willing to take Harpy to pilot, and I got a short out of it, so I really can't complain. And I got the voice actors I wanted, and I was really happy with how the short came out. So yeah, I never expected to see Harpy get animated. It's a very, like, kind of a weird roundabout, like, things you think that nobody's going to want, and it still gets made in some way. It's kind of insane, but...
Yeah, that sounds like such a really cool experience, and especially for something that you know, started doodling in your sketchbook early on, and then seeing it come to fruition in different ways.
Yeah. So I wasn't actively pitching when Nickelodeon asked for Harpy. I had kind of told myself after Amethyst, I was like, you know what, it's really awkward for me to go out and pitch something that studios don't want. But if they come to me with, like, they're like, hey, we're looking for something like this, do you have anything? Then I'll pitch. I kind of did that for my own, like, mental health for a while, because, like, pitching, like, it's hard to, like, separate yourself from the pitch, because, like, you kind of still need to be excited in the room when you're pitching something. And it's an extension of yourself, but also learning to, like, not take it personally. It's tough. Everyone I've talked to who's, like, pitched has gone through this. Like, it does weird things to your head. It really does. And, like,
yeah,
like, you have to kind of relearn. Like, I had to remind myself, like, hey, I was happy drawing and coming up with my own characters when I was, like, 8 years old or whatever, and I wasn't even working for a studio. I want that back. That's the feeling I want back. And then when I work on my comic, that's where I'm at. Like, it's great that other people are reading it, but it's just playing with dolls and telling my own stories in my head. So anyway, sorry, that was a very long-winded, like, development discussion.
No, I love that.
I'm getting a little bit braver about trying to pitch my own ideas again. I'm very behind because I actually am in development for a TV show right now. We're supposed to be taking that pitch out later this month. So I don't know when this is going to air. Who knows if it happens? If it doesn't, it'll be a big bummer. But I really enjoy the people I've been working with on this, and I now have new friendships from that. So who knows where that will lead. Mm-hmm. But I also, like, this is one thing I feel really awful about. I'm very behind on, but I actually signed with a literary agency, and I do have something. Yeah, I do have something I'm developing with my agent. I'm super behind working with her because of this other animation thing that's going on that's now taking up all my time. But hopefully once we take that animation pitch out, I'll be able to sit and work on these other characters that, you know, and then we'll take those out, and hopefully that will be a comic or something. So
it'll be great.
Yeah,
I will buy it when it comes out.
Yay! You don't have to, but that would
get
be
you nice. To sign it.
I'll get you a free copy. Let's just.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, friends get stuff for free. We'll be to a trade.
I'm sure some of the audience is thinking it, because earlier, didn't you say you haven't worked since October, and here you are, like, working. You know?
Oh yeah.
You're working so much.
Well, the thing that's funny is that, and I think this is fairly common with a lot of development. You only get a lot of development jobs. You only get paid when you cross certain goalposts. Yeah. So right now I'm not really getting paid for this. It's very much like a big what if. It's just me doing this on my own time. But I've also become, like, I've had to learn with what I'm comfortable on giving, especially, like, for free. And I think nobody should feel obligated to do work for free. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's another big issue in our industry. And I think a lot of animation writers probably have more to say about that than I do. So, I mean, I have gotten paid for like some goalposts that we've already crossed on this, but I think at this point, like the next payout won't happen unless this actually becomes a series. So this is like me basically just investing time in myself. Part of me is like, well, if this doesn't go, I have a bunch of artwork that, you know, is probably going to be NDA for a while, but I have a bunch of artwork that someday might turn into something else. I don't know. That's something I've kind of learned with like Harpy. Like it's always, you know, it's just kind of kept on plugging along on its own, but it's, you know, things still happen with it, even when I don't expect it. Or I think it's, you know, like I never thought that Harpy would ever be animated. So like, I'm still like kind of amazed by that. But yeah, development doesn't really pay very well. Also, like the other thing too with development is like you're having to pay like legal fees to like negotiate your contract.
Yep.
So that's like extra money to set aside. So I don't know. That's just something to keep in mind. Like I definitely, if like a studio is interested, like definitely get like some sort of representation, like an agent or a lawyer or something. Just have somebody there to have your back. And
how did you find your lawyer? Was it like just recommendations from your network?
It was, yeah, it was a recommendation. It was actually really funny sort of. So like the lawyer, like around the time when I wasn't really looking for work, was also around the time when, you know, I had something that went into development, and they were like, okay, well, you need to find a lawyer. And then I asked a few people. There was one agency that came highly recommended by a couple of my mutuals. I contacted them. That agency basically laughed at me on the phone. Like, I'm not exaggerating. They actually kind of laughed at me. And they were like, well, I've never heard of you before. And I was like, well, this, you know, I made this thing. They want to try to develop it for series. It's a real thing. And they're like, well, we have a retaining fee, which I think is pretty common with some places. But they're like, we have a retaining fee. They told me what the fee was. It was money I did not have.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, they're like, oh, or we can meet you for like brunch and we can discuss. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't, this is too Hollywood. I can't do this. And I politely told them that, like, hey, right off the bat, I'm like, I don't think I can afford you guys. I'm so sorry, you know, whatever. So moved on from that. And then I was like sitting at a coffee shop, just being like, you know, trying to figure out what to do, you know, and like everyone I called would be like, I have somebody I like, but they're not taking any more clients on, you know, or stuff like that. So it was mm-hmm. like really hard at the time to find somebody. And then one of my old coworkers happened to come into the coffee shop I was sitting at, and we were just catching up. And then he mentioned that he was also like doing development stuff. And then I was like, hey, like, do you have somebody you like? Or if, you know, would you be willing to refer them? If not, like, that's okay too. Like, I'm not trying to be like pushy, like if it's, you know, whatever. And he was like, oh no, actually, like, yeah, I'll give you the info for this, for her, you know? And then it turned out that this person also had taught a legal class when I was in college at CalArts State. So I kind of contacted this person and just kind of told them my situation, and they took me on as pro bono at first, which which really helped me out a lot. And, you know, was also kind of nice that I had an older, you know, somebody who'd been in the animation business for a while, like, because that lawyer did a lot of animation stuff before, but, you know, she's older, more experienced, and I was able to chat with her with some of my experience, some of the things I had experienced. And it really helped also pull me out of that mental hole that I was into, like having somebody that was like, yeah, this isn't right, but this is like what we can do or something. And I've been using that lawyer for a while. She's been pretty great. Sorry, I went on another tangent.
It's okay. It really is a whole other world with like the representation and especially legal representation. I feel like I lucked out with a lawyer who, like, I didn't have to pay a retainer fee, but he gets 5% of the existence of the deal. So
oh, that's good.
Yeah. And he's nice. So that's good. I'm horrified. They tried to get you to pay a huge retainer fee.
Yeah. I want to say it was like $5,000. And I don't want to say that, like, they probably, I mean, I'm sure they do great work and they're probably worth it. But for somebody who had been out of work, I think at that point for 6 months, because they weren't looking for animation work and they felt very lost. It was money I did not have. I mean, I probably had a chunk in savings, but that's a huge chunk, especially for like 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah. For 2012 time too. So like it was multiple months worth of rent.
And I feel like, especially with how, erratic's not the right word I'm thinking, but I'm going to use it. Like, it's just such an uncertain path forward because, like, projects can die at any time, you know? So you don't even know, even though, like, all these price, these, like, payment milestones are listed out and all together, you could get, like, so much money.
Yeah. It,
like, you might only get to revising your Bible and get, like, I think, I feel like I got $3,000 for revising a Bible once.
Well, that's,
you know what I mean? Like,
I didn't even get paid for my first development contract job. We never made that first goalpost. We got to outline, but the way that the contract was is we didn't get paid out until we went to script. We never finalized script, so I never got paid for that.
Oh my God.
But the thing is, and this is me. I don't mean to be vindictive or mean, but when I went to development, when I've had other development jobs since then, I bring that up when places I'm like, you need to pay for at least at this goal because I don't trust you to make it that far. Like I'm there. I'm going to give it my all. Like I'm going to do my best, but I need to make sure that I am getting compensated for it, obviously. And then, sorry.
Yeah, no, we shall be paid for our work. So this is a good conversation to have.
Anyone going into development, just try to make sure your goals are set up. And this is nothing against like my lawyer. Like I remember we had to push pretty hard to get that contract. And she had a talk with me that like, your first contract is always your worst, and you're always able to kind of like bargain up since then, and that has been the case. So, So I think the one I have now, it's okay, it's decent, it's fine. Going into development too, like just you have to be aware of what you're okay with, what you yourself are okay giving up or giving away, like what you're comfortable, what your level of comfort is as far as like, you know, most things that go into development do not get made. Like I know I've heard some showrunners are like, oh, most things get made, but these are people who are lucking out on their first show pitch or their second show pitch. Mm-hmm. I know people who pitched way more than me who have never even gotten a pilot. Like I'm lucky because not have I only gotten one pilot, I've had two pilots. Like that's, I'm aware that that's actually kind of obscene. Like that's, yeah. So, I don't know if any of those will ever turn into shows. They don't have to. I think I will. There was a question you asked me before the podcast about like what I wish I would have known before going in, like starting out like young. Mm-hmm. So when the recession hit in 2008 and they were willing to take pitches, one of the reasons I was willing to pitch Harpy was like, for one thing, like I needed a job. Like I saw it as a way of getting myself a job, but I was also like, oh, maybe like if I get a show picked up, I'll be able to afford a house or something.
Oh, the dream.
I know. So I mean, even though I was like still looking for full-time work, I think I was really gung-ho on pitching a show because I was thinking of it as a way to like, you know, have a room of my, I have a 2-bedroom apartment, so I have one room as an office, which is very lucky. But, you know, just having like that sort of space, having a yard and stuff. And the longer I've worked, I've realized that it's more stable and sturdy just to keep the regular job going. Like, pitching is such like a lottery situation. I feel like, I mean, obviously, like, you know, I still think like skill and talent and hard work has value, but there's that extra level of like luck involved because like there's things out of your control and you're in development, like things can get pulled for any reason and it has nothing to do with like the level or quality of your pitch or even how popular your pitch could be if it actually went. I mean, like, you could even have something that's already, like, a studio already owns. Like, you could be pitching an IP that, like, oh, they don't have to, they, you know, they should be more invested because it's something they already own. And, like, they'll still pull it.
We've seen that so many times in the last few months.
That's another thing that, like, I feel that's been really weird for me is, like, I had such a hard time in the early 2010s with some really weird studio shit that isn't normal. Like, I would just be like, oh, this must just be how it is. And, like, I'd have friends and colleagues that were older and like, no, Brianne, that's not normal. What you went through wasn't normal. And then now the whole industry is going through similar to some shit I went through in during that time. And I'm not happy about it. Like, I'm not like, oh yeah, now everyone else knows how I feel. I'm like, no, nobody should have to feel this way. Yeah. But I think, you know, it's not exactly like the same case, because I know a lot of what, you know, our shows have been pulled because of like weird mergers and stuff that is beyond my understanding. But having that rug pulled out from under you is very unnerving, and it's really hard to like recenter yourself after that.
I keep bracing myself for the day that mine gets cut, like my project in development, because like there were so many times where it felt like it was on the cusp and it survived so far.
I've been recently having this weird opposite anxiety. Like, I've actually been having stressed dreams that it does go forward, and I'm like, oh great, oh shit, like now I'm stuck in this. I want this to go. I'm excited.
Of course,
about it,
yeah.
Like, but my nightmares are like it morphs into something it wasn't supposed to be, or you know, they're like, oh, thanks for getting this picked up. We don't need you anymore. We're gonna get this other person, you know, to do it instead.
Both of these worries are real, because yeah, both of those things could happen. And that's another thing with like my mindset having gone in is that I know that, you know, it could die at any time. However, it could happen too, you know, because like, I feel like we've heard so many instances where like a project didn't go through. Like, as you said before, we know so many people who have had projects in development, they've multiple times and like, they haven't run a show yet, or their show hasn't moved on, you know? And of course there are shows that do get seen and produced, but like, it's just amazing that like, I'll show this story, and maybe the audience has already heard this before, so I'm sorry for repeating if you've heard it before. But like, I used to, and you know, gosh, my story editor was so kind to put me on a better path. But like, I was like, because I wanted to freelance on our show, and I'd always be like, do you want me to write that? And aww, he'd be like, no, I have a freelancer in mind, and I would look them up and see all their credits. And some of them didn't have a lot of credits. And I'd be like, I'm not that much less experienced than this person. And my gracious story editor would be like, they've worked in development a lot. You can't tell how much experience a person has just by looking at their IMDb.
Oh,
and I was like,
yeah,
fine. But no, he was right. And I think about that all the time now. So yeah, I think it's really humbling, you know, to realize that, you know?
Yeah. I had one development deal that, while we were early negotiating the contract for what the development would be, that their legal team came back we weren't asking for anything that was like abnormal. I was asking for like middle area, you know, whatever. And they came back and they're like, oh, well, you're green. You've never directed or produced or whatever before. Like, you're too green. You're a risk or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, you know, close to 20 years of experience at this point. And I went on IMDb, took a screenshot of my producer and directing credit, sent to my lawyer. And I'm like, you know, can we, you know, if they don't want this, like, I'm okay walking. Cause like, you know, I'm not being like mean or salty about it, but I'm like, if this is how it's going to be at the beginning, I don't know if I want to deal with this.
Oh my gosh. So true. Yeah. 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 That's incredible. Everything you've shared has been so wonderful so far, and there's so much wisdom there that it's been so great to hear. But, you know, for everything that you've done, another thing that keeps coming up is like separating your creative work from your own self-worth and having a life outside. So can you talk about like, how do you do that? Like passion versus job. How do you separate it from, you know, being the only thing that you see is worth yourself?
Yeah. I think that's something I'm always going to be having to struggle and balance with. Cause, I know like this is not normal and not necessarily healthy for everybody, but like I draw outside of work. It's, I mean, there's definitely, I've definitely have had burnout in times when I don't want to draw. And there's sometimes a month or two will go by when I don't draw anything personal for myself. And that's perfectly fine. I think a lot of people are probably healthier than I am because they have hobbies that don't even involve that. But I think for me, like, you know, it's just, it's something I do that, I don't know, drawing makes me feel good. So especially coloring stuff. So I try to make time for myself on weekends to always work on my own stuff. And I shouldn't be calling it work because it's just stuff for me. Like, but yeah, my comic, I usually rough out pages on weekends and ink them and color them on weekends. And usually I have a buffer. I don't have a buffer right now just because this other stuff I'm doing right now is taking so much time up. But even without a buffer, like I usually try to draw one or two pages of comic every weekend. And I have to use my brain when I'm like roughing out like thumbnails. Like luckily on this current comic chapter, I'm working off of a script for the first time. Usually I work off of an outline and I script as I go. So it's actually been a little bit easier for me having a script and like, just real quick, like the section I'm having to thumbnail right now, like I realized I actually wrote more than I needed to. So I don't need to draw out everything I wrote down on this update for this weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. But I mean, it's nice to have it there for context, you know? But yeah, like, but anyway, when I get to the point where I'm actually inking and coloring the comic, like I don't use my full brain is the best way to describe it when I'm doing that stuff. And this is nothing against anybody who does that stuff professionally, because it's a whole different ball game when you're doing it professionally. Anyway, when I'm inking my comic, like I usually just put on music, or like I love AirPods because you can just have them in your ears and I have both hands, but I'll like catch up with family or like a friend, like I'll call them on the phone. I can just ink and then talk to them. And then coloring is the same way. Like I just color in Photoshop. So I just like scan it in and then just either put on like a YouTube video. So I catch up on YouTube videos, or sometimes like I'll do like a stream or a private, like a Picardo stream with just friends only. And we just catch up in there, you know, because usually I have a friend who's usually like, they're working on their comic stuff too. So it's just kind of turned into like a nice little, like I get, even though I'm like kind of still technically working for myself, but it gives me a moment to slow down and just, you know, take in whatever music I'm listening to, or like learning something on YouTube, or just, and then also like I've gotten really into plants. Like I've got like 4 avocado trees going in my apartment right now.
Nice.
Yeah. I haven't got any that last more than a couple of years, but I think this year will be the year that a couple of them will make it, because I have some that actually have branches now. They're tiny, but my bonsai avocados. But yeah, I've gotten really into houseplants, like, which I think a lot of people have with having to work from home, but it doesn't seem to be ending for me, because, you know, we were talking earlier about like, you know, being in development and trying, like thinking like, oh, this will be a way to own a home. I'm so smart. And no, that's not really how it works. But I still would like a house, because like my plants keep getting bigger and I dream of having like a green room, or like having an actual yard I can like garden stuff with would be amazing. And then my cat can hang out in the green room and, you know, try to get high off of the plants he nibbles on.
That'd be amazing.
But
I look forward to the videos when that when you reach that goal.
Oh, also just real quick too, like even though I'm a nutso weirdo artist because I draw for fun on weekends, I have a very close friend group that is not like online as much as I am. Like they're much healthier than I am, and they work in the industry too, but They all have their own lives and hobbies, so they will invite me along on their own adventures sometimes. So like, they help me stay a little bit more well-rounded. Like if they, you know, want to go out for the day and go walking or go shopping or, you know, hiking or, you know, or they just want to make like, we're going to have brunch today or something, you know, like we have our own potlucks and stuff where we play video games together. Yeah, I think like, you know, it's always good to try to schedule time with any friends and family or, you know, neighbors you have too, and just take time with them. And, you know, yeah, you know, you're get outside your own life a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's helped a lot.
It definitely gives you some objectivity when you dive back into your own stuff too, I feel like.
Yeah.
Sure. I also love that, you know, because you love continuing to draw in your own time and fill your sketchbooks, that you've also found ways to circle friendship meetings and gatherings around that too, you know, and I think that's so smart. Because it is so easy to just kind of hermit and do your own thing and forget that the outside world exists.
Yeah, and like to give them like even more credit, like it's not necessarily me scheduling, it's just them like going out of their way to keep me in the loop or asking if I want to do things. And I'm really fortunate to have friends that, you know, like are that open. So it's like, you know, sometimes I get blinders on real easily when I'm working on stuff. Like, you know, like I get hyper focused and like, you know, a couple days might go by. So I don't know. I'm very fortunate that they include me in their own life. Fun life things. Like I have a friend, sometimes they'll just text me and be like, I need to run errands and go to Target, do you want to go? And I'm like, yeah, sounds amazing. Like stuff like that is like so silly, but it never ends up with us just going to Target. We always end up going somewhere else or doing other things, or like, you know, or like there's like, I remember like over the summer me and a friend decided we're gonna go to Torrance to try to get rid of some old art books and stuff, and that turned into like a crazy long adventure, especially since like we thought we were smart going to the book off in that big Torrance mall, and then found out there's actually two book offs in the Torrance mall next to two different Macy's in the mall.
Oh wow.
So yeah, we got a lot of walking in that day. But yeah, stuff like that is just kind of funny. And we used to go pre-pandemic, we used to all go to Disneyland a lot. And I was also like, mm-hmm. I worked at Disney for a while, so I was like, everybody kind of had like a bigger pass, so it was like kind of easy just to go whenever. And I kind of miss doing that, but I don't know, it's nice just to have people to do things with. So I'd say don't, like, you know, as easy as it is to get really into whatever your day job is, especially with animation related things and how we get hyper focused on our deadlines and like, you know, trying to figure out what our next thing is going to be, it's nice to be able to remind yourself like to take breaks and enjoy, like, why are you working so hard if you're not like enjoying life a little bit? So
yeah so true. Because you're gonna wear yourself thin and ragged before like you enjoy your life, and you should be enjoying it along the way too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, stories and characters come from life, which I know every animator and animation person in existence has like mentioned, I'm sure, at some point. So,
yeah, for sure. Like go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I was like, you can't do Illusion of Life if you don't go on friendships to Target once a week. So,
yeah. Because I feel like you could probably tell a story about like a Target run gone wrong, you know, like that could be something someday, even if small piece of a bigger story, right?
Yeah,
and that's what makes it relatable to the audience.
Ultimately. Yeah,
yeah. So I know we've been recording for a while, and we are wrapping up with some funner questions.
Yeah.
So, who is your, you know, you probably have many favorites, but at this moment, what is one of your favorite characters in any of fiction? It can be animation, film, books, anything out there.
Oh man, I'm so
And
basic.
why?
I'm just gonna, oh man, I'm gonna look around my office because I have to also preface with like I'm really behind on watching movies and TV shows because I'm always working on my comic instead.
Yeah.
Man, what have I been watching recently? Oh, you know what? I'll be really like, you know, this will be really outdated in like a year. I've been watching, was it Ice Guy and what is it? Shoot. Cool Girl and Ice. Oh, man, I am an old person by saying this way. I'm gonna look it up on my phone to make sure. Ice Guy and Cool Female Cult Colleague on, it's on Crunchyroll. And
That
it is
sounds
about, it's about like 20 to 30 year olds that work at a business and they date. And it just happens that the guy is his great 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 grandmother was a Yoki Onna, which is like one of the ice ghost ladies. So every time he gets like happy, like there's a little blizzard and he makes a little
Aww.
snowman. So it's very light and fluffy. So I don't know. Watching that.
I'm looking it up and I can't wait to dive into this. Looks
Yeah,
fun.
it's very light. I think because I've been like so busy, you know, and I think it's still currently updating. It's based off of a web comic too. It might be on, I don't know if it's on Webtoon or if it's on one of the other. So I need to check that out. I think I'm pretty current with Spy Family as like on the manga. I just use the Viz app. Yeah, I'm like super behind. I think the other thing I'm reading that I'm currently caught up on, and I don't mind giving a shout out because it's also like a fellow coworker from a past show, is oh God, I might be saying her last name right or wrong. Let me look it up really quick. But
Okay.
one of my coworkers does a webcomic called Daughter of the Lilies, and it's really good. It's also hosted on Hiveworks that hosts RPG. But I want to make sure I don't butcher her last name. Where is it? Oh, good. She has it like phonetically spelled out on her website. Meg Severud. She's the author and artist. She has a colorist that helps out too. It's also fantasy. Like if you're into Harpy, I think like Daughter of the Lilies is like a little bit more like probably more YA, more adult. Like not in a bad way, just what do you call it? Yeah. Anyway, like stuff goes down, but the cast of characters is really great. So I've been reading that. And yeah, so I didn't really answer your question properly, but I think it's because I have like too much on my plate as far as like the stuff I
No,
do. So like
that's
that's
totally
something that,
okay.
yeah,
However
but
you
it's
want to answer.
I don't, it's something like I'm always lacking in, and I really need to like try to put more of an effort, like trying to keep up with like there's TV shows I still need to watch that like are on my watch list, like
Yeah,
obvious stuff that
me
I'm sure I
too.
would love, but
Ultimately,
yeah.
like we only have so much time in a day, and if you want to watch it, then you'll get to it, you know? And if you don't, we can't watch everything, right? We can't read everything.
Yeah.
But I love
Yeah.
that I've never heard of these two things, and I'm so excited
Oh
to
yeah,
read them.
I think you'll enjoy them. I mean, like Spy Family is like super popular and like there's other things I've like been reading. I think it's just like that's what's fresh in my mind right now. Like overall, like there's a lot of like TV shows and movies and things that like I love, which makes it really hard for me to pick one. So
Yeah.
like I
That's been a
watched,
recurring
yeah.
thing where I ask for like what's your favorite character in all of like media history, and it's like hard to define, you know?
Yeah. I think lately whenever people ask me that, I try to think of like web comics. Like even though I'm behind on like almost everybody I know who makes web comics or stuff I was reading, like I at least try to like remind people that that's somewhere you can go and it's free. And a lot of the stories that are being told in web comics are, I think a lot of us in animation wish we could do for like an actual studio, but it falls into that risk category, you know? But I think that's a good place to go if you, especially like, you know, there's a lot of them are like you can just catch up slowly during your like work breaks and things. Also, it's supporting other artists, so, and
Yeah,
writers.
totally. So, like, do you feel, and this is kind of going back to, like, questions, but, like, you know, I know I've felt this before because, like, I've thought about doing a webcomic, and it feels like the, you know, the landscape is so saturated with so many comics, you know, because there was a huge boom earlier, right, when, like, things like Webtoons started to pop up and stuff like that. So, like, do you feel like we should even worry about that? Like, it's not too late for someone to start their webcomic.
Oh,
even
no.
Though that is true, right?
Yeah, it's never too late. I think the thing with comics, and I've definitely seen other mutuals who do comics and also work in animation and some that don't, there's never like a point that's too late to start a comic. I will say, though, going into a webcomic, like, I guess a lot of people say, like, you know, start with smaller stories. I did it backwards. I started with something I didn't expect to turn into, like, something that would go this long. But mine's kind of an anomaly because, like, I still enjoy it. And I've made a rule for myself. I'm only going to do this as long as I enjoy it. And, like, I think I've only got a few more years left till I get to the ending. So, like, that's enough to keep me going.
Whoa.
Like, yeah, like, it's, and it sounds like a long time, but also the older you get, like, time moves faster. So I'm just like, oh, that'll be like tomorrow for me, because then, you know, whatever. But I will say, though, if you're going into comics just thinking of it as like a job or a stepping stone to something career-wise, like, that might not be the healthiest mentally or for your time, because I think also, too, if you're starting a webcomic, be mindful of how long a page will take you, like, how much time you're willing to give it to yourself. Like, someone like me, I don't really have that many responsibilities outside of myself. Like, I don't have kids. I don't have an immediate, like, I don't have anyone I have to be taken care of. I know I'm saying this because I've had supervisors who've actually asked me this question where they thought that they needed to start a webcomic so that the higher ups at a studio will recognize them or, like, help them sell a show or help them career-wise because they were feeling creatively stuck too. But these were also people who have a family at home that have other things on their plate. And I was just really honest with them that, for one thing, I don't think they should feel bad about not making work outside of work. I don't think anyone should feel bad about that. But also, it's like, there's nothing wrong with, you know, just like, if you don't have the time, then you don't have the time to do it. Don't feel about bad for not being able to do one or something. Also, I don't think my comic, I mean, I'm also, like, very much an outlier. Sorry, I'm, like, bad with words. Outlier. But, and just overall lucky with it. But, like, overall, other than my comic getting me its own pilot, the comic itself hasn't really led to work because of the comic. Sometimes it comes up in interviews, but most of the people I work with in animation don't, unless they've been working with me a while and I'm, like, really obnoxious about it, then eventually they find out. But most people, when I start working with them, don't even know I have a web comic. Like, those universes don't usually cross over too much. So, yeah, for me personally, the things I've gotten out of doing a web comic is, like, It gives me a space to let out all that creative energy that I don't get to use during the day. I feel like it's actually improved my storyboarding a bit, because even though comics and storyboarding are two different beasts, it's actually kind of helped with some of my staging and some of my layouts in general. And also just thinking about how to set up a scene. One of the things I had with a director back in around 2015, I was working as a board bartender. I didn't let a lot of people early on that I hadn't worked with, that didn't know me super well, know that I had a comic outside of work, because I always made sure the comic was done on my own time. Like, I would either work on it during lunch break or I work on weekends. But as you know, as a board artist, sometimes our board artists, like, it's a very time intensive job usually. And even though, like, sometimes I would have to ask for an extra day or two on a board just because, like, the script and the amount of characters were just, and the amount of action were just so heavy. But the thing was, is I didn't want to let anyone know I had a comic outside of work. Cause, like, then I didn't want them to turn around and be like, oh, this is why you were late, because you had your comic. not to, and it shouldn't be anyone's business what you do outside of your day job anyway. And that's probably me being just a little overly paranoid because of experiences of I've had in the past. But this particular director, though, once he found out a webcomic, he was very supportive of it. And he actually took screen caps of my comic one day. I guess he sat down and read it and sent screen caps. And I had like, there's one part of my comic where some of the characters were all done in silhouette. Like I kind of did like a, a shadow puppet sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, we could do this in the show if you want. Like, I think this would look really cool. Do you want to try using this for one of your scenes? Which that's an awesome thing for a director to do. Like, you know, that's offering guidance, but also like tailoring it to your artist, like what your artist's strong sense is. So, so I did a scene in silhouette based off of how I had the comic staged, and, it made it into the show. They liked it. And, and this is like also something I think is really funny. And like, I don't think it's bad at all because like, I know I'm very close with the person who asked. But anyone who's watched, I think I forgot what it's called. I want to say it's Batman versus Ninja Turtle because that's what I call it. But I think it's just Batman TMNT. It's like a direct-to-video special they did a few years ago where the Ninja Turtles and Batman have to team up because like all the Arkham guys are like shooting each other with like mutagen because that's what they would totally do. But they needed to figure out a part with like Poison Ivy. Like Poison Ivy turns herself into like a big tree. And there's a part of a Harpy chapter, which was a few years old by that point, where she has to fight a plant monster. And she figures out that the plant monster can't move from the middle of the room because it's basically stuck with its roots. So I had a friend who was one of the directors on this movie, and he messaged me. He's like, hey, do you want to board this sequence? Do you mind using that gag again? And I'm like, yeah, totally. So I just think it's, I just think it's really funny. I mean, I got paid for it. It's just like a minor thing, but it's just like, it's kind of funny. Like the turtles go into this room and Poison Ivy's like, I'm the ultimate life form. I'm a tree, and you can't stop me. And she's all big and scary and stuff. And then like, I think Michelangelo or somebody realizes like, hey, just stay along the wall and walk to the other door. And they just like leave her there. They don't even fight her.
That's hilarious. I'll have to look that episode up.
Yeah, it's like a full on DTV. I think it's still on HBO Max too. It's actually really, it's a superhero thing. It's definitely got some violence, but it actually definitely has some like very like campy humor. Mm-hmm. There's like a T-Rex mutant in it. It's really dumb, but it's pretty fun. And but
fun,
yeah,
and dumb is actually like, I feel like underrated. Yeah, to be honest.
No, it totally is. Like, I love, that's the kind of stuff I put on after like a long day of work. I'm like, yeah. I just want, entertain me. I don't need to think. But but yeah, I think those are like the only few times I can say like my comic has really influenced like my day job stuff. It really, I think drawing wise, it's like helped me get faster. Because as a character designer, we focus on details so much and like making sure everything's very precise. As a board artist, we have to work really fast and loose. But when I'm doing comics, it's like this nice in between where, it's only me, no one else. I'm only approving myself, but also with comics, like it's going to force you to have to draw things you never had to draw before. Like you're going to have to draw backgrounds. You're going to have to like figure out how to draw a prop, or you're going to have to figure out like how to do this expression or staging, or you have to make sure everything kind of works together. In a weird way, like doing a comic might be like a nice background to have if you like want to move into like maybe a supervising or directing position, just because you have to be aware of all the moving parts. Mm-hmm. Like it might be a nice, I don't want to say it's like one-to-one, but like I think there's like a similar thought process there where you have to plan ahead and like have your stuff figured out as you before you go, if you can, especially if you're doing something that's like a narrative or linear storytelling, it helps.
Yeah. I mean, it's like making like the things that are in your control that can prepare you for something that you might want in the future. Cause I feel like that's kind of what this podcast started out as, besides not there not being a lot of women or femme-presenting people or non-binary people out there doing interviews on other animation podcasts. Like, the other part of it was getting to talk to all these professionals and prepare myself to collaborate and work on teams and understand what they do and how the pipeline works, you know? And, like, as someone who hopes to be an executive producer and showrunner one day, that felt important to me, you know? And it was also the only thing that I could do to prepare myself in that way. Whether or not it eventually happens, but it's really fun to do, right?
Yeah, I think you can totally do it. I
think you can too. And you have with your pilots.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I feel like a small scale, but yeah, I think like show running, it's very glitzy and like shiny looking, but like it, I'm aware that it comes with a lot of extra stresses, and like I've had close friends and just, you know, you come out changed, a changed person on the other side for better or worse, you know? So I don't know. It used to be something I really wanted, and I wouldn't say it's not that I don't want it anymore, but I think I'm just aware of what that really entails anymore. And I think that's also like one reason that like I really lean into the stuff I do outside of work. Because like, even though it's not really something I can make a full living off of, I've been kind of like pushing it a little bit, especially since it's like, just to have like, I'm trying to treat it more like a second income lately, just because of how the status of our industry and stuff. But as a mental like thing, like it's for mental health reasons and stuff, it's actually been like a pretty good thing for me. Like, I know it annoys people, but I've kind of gotten to the point now where I'm like, I don't care. You can just mute me. It's totally fine. That, you know, it's a free, you know, you're free to do that. And that's, you know, I can't be upset about that either. Yeah, like, I think the whole reason I got into like doing animation was because I like to create things, and I still do, but like, you know, sometimes there's downtime that we don't have control over in the industry, and this way I can still make stuff. Like, no one's going to be able to stop me unless, like, you know, the entire internet, like the cord gets plugged, and then I'm like, well, I can't share it, but I guess I'll just keep drawing it for myself.
Yeah. I love that as a note to end on too. Like, no matter what happens, keep drawing for yourself.
Yeah. If you want to, like, or, you know, make cupcakes or go for a walk, but like, don't let a studio saying like, I don't get it, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, don't, it's a way to like learn how to not take stuff too personally too. Like, I mean, I still struggle with it, but like, it's nice to have that outside, like, I don't want to call it a crutch, but, you know, something else to hang my hopes and dreams on, I guess.
Yeah, so true. Something that you control and you push forward. Yeah. If you want to. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been an amazing talk, and I'm sure it's going to help so many people either clarify the direction they want to go or just, you know, inspire them to make their own thing or get outside and go for a walk.
Yeah, I hope so. Like, I hope like a lot of stuff I've talked about doesn't scare anybody off. Like, overall, like, my experience working in animation has been honestly really, really great. And sometimes there's just stuff that's out of your control, and like learning how to be flexible and to move around that is just something all of us have to learn for ourselves, you know. But we, you know, also I think it's good to remember that as a community overall, animation, like, everyone's, most people are very like supportive of each other, you know. Like, don't ever feel like you're alone or you're the only one going through it, I guess.
Yeah, that's so true.
Please, and like, you know, we always need you, even when things are bad. Like, you know, like, I know there's not a lot of work out there, but don't feel like you are not needed or wanted, or that your voice doesn't like matter, because it definitely does. It just, some things take time, and, you know.
No, I love that. Thank you, Brianne. You're amazing. Keep going. Keep thriving.
Same to you. We'll have to catch up and have coffee soon.
Ink and Paper Paint Folk is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. This episode was produced by me, Cassie Soliday. Music by Dominique Parker. Edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.